Welcome back, guys. DGS on KMOX. Time to talk to our pal, Ricky Horton. Hello, Rick. How you doing, pal, my friend?
Hey, Dave. How are you? Good to chat with you.
So, you are getting a few days off. Oh, first of all, how'd the horse show go?
Well, the horse show went well. Ann was not happy with where she finished, but in my mind, she was the prettiest rider out there with on the nicest-looking horse, so that's all that really matters.
Well, you just charmed Rachel, that's for
sure.
Yeah,
that's really sweet.
Everybody in the audience went,
oh. I hear that's not that hard to do. I don't know.
No, I was going to ask you, you're getting a few days off here, and believe it or not, back when my eligibility ran out in college for track, I got super into lifting and bodybuilding, and I was one of these, let's do two a day, let's do three a day, let's blast our arms 5 days in a row. Took me a long time to understand the absolute necessity of rest. Talk about that for big leaguers, and especially the week off they get in the middle.
Wow. So first of all, I want to see pictures of you when you were buffed. I mean, that's number one.
I can guarantee you don't.
Okay. But honestly, that is such an under thought of, I think, thing about being an athlete is the importance of rest. And I think anybody, when you go to a weight trainer, or that's the whole point about lifting weights is you have to rest in between to let your body kind of break down and build up again. That's the whole point of it. And you know, rest matters. And it's not just the physical part of it. I mean, just even for me, and all I do is talk about it. I don't even own it. I'm just talking about it. But just getting a couple of days just to kind of clear my mind kind of helps kind of reorient things. I like to call it a mental filing cabinet. And you kind of need to file things away. You purge some things. You file some things away. You kind of come to some conclusions and decisions. I think rest is incredibly important to an athlete.
So, Rick, we were talking about, I think people find this sort of behind-the-scenes stuff fascinating, so to whatever degree you can and are willing to kind of give us your secret sauce with Rooney, we're talking with Ron, who's done play-by-play, Wheels has done play-by-play, and how fascinating it is, like with Buck and Shannon, and Jack Buck was the play-by-play guy, Shannon was the color guy, then he started doing some play-by-play, you do play-by-play, like just kind of walk us through how it happens, having been up in the studio with you guys on any number of occasions, you kind of let me come up there. It's fascinating to watch.
Yeah, well I would say my play-by-play, let me just give you my personal thought. My play-by-play has become kind of this amalgam of being around some of the great people that have done that, Jack Buck, and of course being around Vin Scully too in L.A., but John Rooney. You know, I worked with Jay Randolph. I worked with Wayne Hagen. I worked with Bob Carpenter. I worked with Joe Buck. I mean, just a lot of people that it's like, man, I just want to be kind of catch some of the things that they do. It's not that I'm copying that, but I just, you know, you study that, you realize, you know, that they're the great ones, so they do it easily. But, you know, you try to kind of learn from that the best you can. But, you know, John is extraordinarily prepared. That's where I would start is, and you know from being up there, it doesn't start at, you know, 7:08 for a 7:10 game. I mean, it is 4 hours earlier, getting scorecard ready, getting thoughts about where you might go, what you might be seeing. And, you know, you don't want to, you know, you can't kind of plan your ad-libs, as John likes to say, but you do have to be prepared.
Yeah.
How much does that, Rick, sound? I mean, to me, I hear that. I hear a lot of what I hear from athletes, you know, people that influenced them. They picked up from this guy. They picked up from that teammate. You learned a little tip from this guy. It sounds like it's the same idea.
Yeah, it really is. And there's no question. You know, people always assume that the coach of a big league team is the one you learn from. And I would say, you know, 80% of what you learn from teammates, not from the coaches are paying attention to what you're doing in a way that your teammates, while they're busy doing their own thing, but the coach is that extra set of eyes for you to keep you right on the one thing that you do well. I mean, that's honestly, I was a coach too. So, you know, you're looking for when a guy's right, what's he doing and how does he look and how does he act and how can I get him, help him get to that point? I'm not getting him there. He's got to get himself there. But how do you kind of move him in that direction? But your teammates are going to show you their grip on slider. They're going to tell you, hey, you know, don't pitch Darryl Strawberry away. Pitch him in. I mean, that stuff you get from teammates, not from coaches.
Rick, looking at the second half, I was getting prepping the kind of series preview video that we do here for at KMOX in advance of every series, and just looking at the first half breakout player for the Cardinals, It has to be Alec Burleson, right? I mean, if you had looked back on opening day and said, coming out of the All-Star break, he would lead the team in home runs and runs batted in and be carrying a good average and throwing people out from the outfield and being an everyday player for the first time, I don't think we would have predicted it, but he has been a massive development for the team.
You would have one person that would be saying what you just said, and that's Oliver Marmol. Ollie has said that for the last year and a half. He has said Alec Burleson is our best hitter. And wait till you see him. I mean, he's got basketball skills like nobody else. And not that, you know, it's not like, you know, the other guys aren't good. The point is, he is unique in his bat skills. And so, you know, some people are just born to hit, and he's that guy. So I think Ollie has always told us, look, he's our best hitter. Now, we got to figure out how that works in the context of the team and how we get him at bats and all of that.
Right.
And so, you know, he's been able to get at bats on it, frankly, because some guys have gotten hurt and some guys have underperformed. So he's gotten his chance and he's taken advantage of it, and good for him.
And Rick, talk about, like, because this is a great, to me, when we define, you know, pitcher versus thrower or hitter versus power hitter. I think there's that bat to ball contact you're describing, and there are different types of hitters, and he is that kind. He is that guy that is going to put the bat on the ball. He doesn't strike out very much at all in an era where everybody strikes out.
Yeah, they do, and that's what makes him unique. I actually started to say the other day, he kind of reminds me of Kyle Schwarber, and I said, no, he doesn't. He doesn't strike out.
Different guy,
he's a guy that, you know, kind of almost like you're not really sure what his position is, although he does have a great arm. You know, it's funny, the East Carolina thing, Seth Maness told us the other day on our Friday night at Lowe's, he said, Alec Burleson was a stud in college as a pitcher at East Carolina, which is where Seth Maness went. He said, this dude could flat out pitch. And it's like, no wonder he's throwing guys out from the outfield.
Right.
So he's not one dimensional, but you know, he's not a Brendan Donovan. He's not a Tommy Edman. He's not going to play all over the field. He's got some limited options of where he plays, but I don't think he's really hurting you anywhere. In fact, he is at one point, he was, in fact, I think still now he is third on the Cardinals in stolen bases. How about that stat?
That always amazes me. Just, it's one thing to be a great position player, but you have guys like Paul Skeens, who was a catcher, for the love of God.
Yeah.
And converted him into the best pitcher in baseball now, arguably. And guys like what we're just talking about, that is next level elite athleticism.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, some guys are really certain, and baseball is that way. You know, when you're a kid, you play where you want to play. It may not be where you are the best at. I mean, you just enjoy certain things, and you playing in the backyard, you envision yourself as Johnny Bench or as, you know, Yadier Molina or whoever, so I'm going to catch. And then somebody, a scout tells you, you know, by the way, you're throwing 101 miles an hour. Maybe you ought to think about this. You know, the Cardinals had a dilemma with Mason Wynn.
Right.
Because Mason Wynn was throwing high 90s in high school, and the thought was, this guy should be a pitcher. And they had a developmental decision to make with Mason Wynn, and I would say they made the right choice.
Yeah, and it's an interesting call because, you know, there's this debate, right, about which has more value, a starting pitcher versus a position player. And people are like, well, one guy plays every day. But keep in mind, you know, that pitcher will face as many hitters in a year as that batter will have at bats. So, you know, when people start, well, he only plays every 5 days. Yeah, but he faces 20 guys. He's facing 25 guys, and that hitter's only going to have 4 at-bats a game, and he may not get a pitch to hit. He may get pitched around. I think that's interesting because you have to weigh some of it, Rick. I think would it be like personality or difficulty? Like, it's a lot harder to find good shortstops that can play every day and hit versus a good starting pitcher that may or may not get hurt.
Right. You need all of that, and you have to kind of balance that with what the ceiling of the guy is. I think the ceiling of Mason Wynn as a shortstop is an all-star. I mean, he's got that kind of ceiling. As a pitcher, you'd say, well, you know, maybe he'll be a reliever, and it's like, okay, well, let's go with that. Let's go with the everyday player. But you know, John Rooney loves to say, and he said it several times, I think he got it from Jim Fregosi. He said, you know, a manager is only as good as that day's starting pitcher. So that on a given day, the starting pitcher is the single most important person.
Without question.
Now, less so than 20 years ago, but still a fact. And the point is, your right fielder may be at the plate for a grand total of 2 minutes. He may have one ball hit to him that may take 20 seconds.
Right.
So what he does takes 2 minutes and 20 seconds. I mean, think about that.
Yeah.
You can actually freeze out the right fielder potentially the way a basketball team would do. You can't do that with a starting pitcher.
Rick, I'm fascinated. Kind of a continuing thing we have going on today with athleticism. Being a former pitcher yourself, when you're on, when you're not on, when you have your stuff, you don't have your stuff. I know what it feels like in this job, which is more similar to your job now, to have your stuff and everything you say is funny or it's not funny, or you can't find a word,
yeah.
and you just can't wait for the show to end. What is it like as a pitcher when you take the mound and you have it or you don't have it? What's the feeling in your body?
So, I mean, that's so funny you say that, because sometimes, I get the broadcaster version of that, too, where you realize in mid-sentence, what am I saying?
What the hell am I talking about?
I just did that the other day.
And here's the other thought you have. I'm boring myself. I mean, how can everybody else must be bored, too, because I don't really know what I'm saying. So yes, I get that. I mean, we all have that as a in the broadcasting world. But as a pitcher, mentally, what you do is you click into some lie gear in your own head. Honestly, that's what you do. I mean, Dave LaPointe used to say, don't ever come out and ask me how I feel, because I'm going to lie to you, because I have to. And I think that's a great thought about how athletes compete. You have to do with what you have. And so if things aren't going well, you basically say, okay, well, that's over. Now I'm going to be Nolan Ryan. I mean, you just have to just kind of will your – it's a will issue. And then after it's all over, you go, well, that didn't work. Move on. Get it next time. But you can't, in the moment, give in – to the reality of that situation. And that's true in any athletic thing, including riding horses. So I need Rachel, by the way, to text my wife and tell her I said how pretty she looked on the horse. If she wouldn't mind doing that, I would be very grateful.
I got your back, Rick. Don't worry.
Thank you, Rachel. I appreciate
so
that.
Here's what I respect about Ricky Horton. Many husbands would think to compliment their wives. Very few would think to compliment the horse.
Yeah, well, honestly, in our house, the horse is more important than I am. So I get the pecking order. I mean,
trying to stay so in
her horse. Her horse is named Hullabaloo, and I don't want to say anything bad about Hullabaloo, or I am in deep water.
Hey, Rick, one last question before we let you go. For guys like Carlson and Edmund, and to a lesser degree, guys like Gorman, but people are going to call Mozeliak and ask if Gorman's available. If you're someone who articles are being written about and people like us are talking about near the trade deadline, what does that do to your everyday life?
Yeah, it's really hard for the player, because you get a little unsettled. And although, you know, part of being a baseball player is unsettling. I mean, you play in the minor leagues, you may move from city to city. You know, you went from college to the minor leagues, and you're playing at another place and another place. And you hear, it's not like it's the first time they've heard trade rumors. Even the draft that just happened, nobody knows who's going to pick you. I did not know I was going to be picked by the St. Louis Cardinals. I actually met a scout in Williamsburg, pitching against William & Mary. I didn't know that guy liked what he saw, because I didn't think I pitched that great that game, and they end up drafting me in the fourth round. I don't know that. So there's some unsettling kind of, well, wherever we go, we go. So I think they kind of learn to deal with that. But I think the team concept is important, because, you know, you still have relationships with your teammates and you want to continue those. And you know, the unsettling nature of that, I think, is a bigger deal.
All right, buddy. We appreciate it. Welcome back, and we'll hear you tomorrow night.
Look forward to it. Thanks, guys and gals.
I'll tell you guys about Alternative Mortgage Solutions. Rick Horton is what I wish I were as a person.
He's pretty awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
He just seems like the real deal.
Yeah.
Boy, I wish something bad come out about him. maybe I'll start it. You know, he doesn't like that Hullabaloo horse, I'll tell you that much. 223 DGS. They had a guidance counselor on today from the high school of the shooter on Saturday. And the guy was a little, personality, he was a little out there, you could tell. He's you know, he's got a personality on him. But he was absolutely adamant. He kept saying things like, I absolutely 100% guarantee you, which was strange for a guy in counsel to be saying things like that this kid was not bullied, because I would have known about it, and my ear is to the ground, and I know everything the kids know, and if I would have known about it, I would have reported it, and we would have had meetings next YZ. Fine. And this is less about this kid and more about in general. That seems so tone deaf to me, because I know my daughter pretty well, but you'll never hear me say, I 100% guarantee you I know everything going on in her life, because I don't.
Mm-mm. Right.
He's full of it. There's no way you can.
And he's probably panicking, because
he shouldn't be. I mean,
I do think it reflects.
Yeah, unless he bullied him.
Right.
I mean, it doesn't reflect stellar upon certain people in a kid's life when that kid is like, I was bullied so much I tried to kill the president and got killed in the process.
Well, yeah,
I'm not saying it's his. I'm not saying that the...
He's on the bingo card.
Yeah, he doesn't hold any responsibility in my eyes, but I think it would be easy if you're a guidance counselor to be like, oh, did I drop the ball here? I better do everything I can to make sure that everyone's aware I did not drop the ball here. And that can manifest, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's you made a good point, Dave. Like, no parent knows 100% of what their kid is doing.
No, you're fooling yourself if you think you do.
And if a parent doesn't, there's very little chance that a guidance counselor does.
Yeah. Were you going to say something, Rach?
No, I was just going to say, I think it's weird that he did the interview in the first place.
Yeah.
Because we have so little information, and it's like, oh, I'll go on TV and talk about, I mean, I assume it was on TV.
Yeah.
I'll go on TV and just run my mouth about this and make huge sweeping claims. Like, okay, that's really strange.
Speaking of Phoebe Glover, we were talking about this in the break. Phoebe's 19. She can vote. She is pretty apolitical. She's just not that interested and not sure she's going to vote. And I am torn because I didn't vote until I was in my 20s. I couldn't have cared less. I didn't understand anything about anything. And I want her to be politically engaged. I want her to be active. I want her to use her constitutionally guaranteed right to vote and be a part of the process. At the same time, you don't want your kid to grow up too fast. And right now, being politically sort of numb sounds pretty damn good to me.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, I think she's at the age, a lot of people don't vote in the first election they're able to vote in. Just guessing, I might even say the majority of people don't. I think it would be kind of tough to like pressure her into doing it if it's not something she's interested in. It's like, now do all this homework.
I just don't
and
know
figure
what to
out.
Root for.
Right.
It's almost like when your kids are growing up too fast and they're wearing clothes that are sort of sexualized. You're like, oh man, I wish you were still 8 years old and playing in the kiddie pool. It's the same kind of feeling that I want you to know what's going on in the world. I want you to be a part of it, but.
Yeah, but no matter what it is, it should come from them.
Yeah.
You know, I was at 19, I didn't care. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have voted in the first presidential election I could have if I wasn't dating my wife, who was, you know, basically like, I'm voting, so you should. Like, I wouldn't have done it. I would have been like, I don't care. It doesn't matter. That would have been the attitude. Mm-hmm. And in some ways, depending on where you live, it doesn't really change much.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Guess who's gone woke now?
Oh boy, who is it?
The barrel.
The barrel?
Cracker Barrel.
Oh.
Although I saw this on the horizon.
What did they do?
What have
they've
they
been
done?
Leaning woke for some time.
They are revamping the Cracker Barrel outlets so that they look sort of like a Panera Bread in Manhattan.
Yeah.
They're very Spartan. They're very slick. Hardwood floors, not in the meemaw kind of way, but in like the, you know, I've got a condo on in the Upper East Side kind of way. Everything's very slick and corporate and modern.
Who asked for this?
Nobody.
Ugh.
Yeah, that's kind of like anti your brand.
I know. I'm not a Cracker Barrel person, but if I'm going to, if Andrew convinces me to join him at Cracker Barrel,
one day.
And I show up and it's all like sleek and Manhattan, I'd be like, what are we doing?
Yeah,
what is the point
it.
Of this?
Your Cracker Barrel.
Your name is Cracker Barrel.
Right.
Come on.
It's a barrel of crackers.
I guess the CEO said that they the old brand just isn't working anymore and they need to try some new things. And it's like, no, you don't.
Let's try being something that we are not.
Right.
The thing is, there will always be a place for Cracker Barrel, but I do feel like I do feel like the era of the barrel is passing, right? Like the people
he's about
who,
to drop some wisdom.
Well, it's just the P1s of Cracker Barrel, if you will, the core audience outside of people like me who have fond memories and feel a fond sense of warmth when they step into one, are people who are starting to sort of age out of it. They're people who are in their, you know, late 60s, 70s, 80s. They're getting to the point where
people in their 40s aren't typically Cracker Barrel people, and you need to get them to become one.
Yeah, and so the younger people, people like Rachel, for example, Rachel's like, I have no interest in ever setting foot in a Cracker Barrel. However, as
she
already
stink on that.
I know.
You, I have tried to get you to go to Cracker Barrel so many times, and those are your exact words. You're like, I'm not interested.
It's just not my thing.
There you go. See?
Good point. Food's not your thing.
Not.
I don't.
Ooh, get her,
know,
Kevin.
Jelly beans, McHale's Navy is not your thing.
Get her, Kevin.
I just feel like I've been, I think I've been to Cracker Barrel twice in my life. I wasn't impressed with the food.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm, you know what? Maybe we should take a field trip and best thing on the menu.
I don't know what to tell you other than you're wrong. However.
Well, it does depend. Sometimes, I mean, every chain has a time, as a restaurant or one that's not run well, or they have a bad night, the cook's not paying attention,
sure, but,
or whatever.
But to the original point, younger people don't care about Cracker Barrel, and as Rachel already illustrated, smoothing it out into a Manhattan apartment and putting a bunch of, making everything gray and black and putting a water feature on one wall or whatever isn't going to get the 30 and 40-year-olds to want to go to Cracker Barrel.
If you're doing that, then just change the restaurant.
How would you market it? How do you get Rachel Zimmerman in there?
Yeah.
Well, they've started leaning very hard. I've noticed when I've been in there the last few times that they're leaning very hard on alcoholic beverages.
People are going to the barrel and getting wide,
which is an interesting idea for what is traditionally like a highway side road
little family
trip.
Restaurant.
Yeah, I thought that's where you went, like after church.
Restaurant.
It is kind of,
but they've been hitting that hard. They always have like bomb pop flavored cocktails and all manner of such. And so maybe you lean a little heavier on that. Maybe you go, like, this is a place where you can go for a date night and have a couple of drinks and have 16 pounds of chicken and dumplings.
Last night, just kind of apropos of this, my mom is in a Bethesda nursing home in Webster Groves, Oakland area. And the whole family met there last night after the show. And then afterwards, we're going to Denny's. And we were, I don't know who is the most excited about Denny's, probably Feeb. And so we pull up to the Denny's at Watson and Lindbergh, I think it is. And, look at this. There's not many people in the parking lot. Fantastic. And
Glover's
like,
got it all to themselves.
There's really not a lot of people in the parking lot. And we get up there and Nick yanks on the door and it's locked.
Oh.
And their power was out.
Oh.
And the depth of disappointment. Mm. It's not Capitol Grill.
You wanted
it's
those
Denny's, but we were.
You wanted those things we had with Trish after we
the
went
chocolate
to
balls,
oh, yeah,
the pancake balls.
Yes, the pancake balls.
Those were good.
Yeah, nothing wrong with a Grand Slam.
Nope, mm-mm. Nothing wrong with Moons Over Miami either.
Yeah. By the way, on that question, like, how do you get those people into any restaurant? Ask them what they want and give it to them.
Kevin can solve anything.
He can. He's so confident.
But
I'm so jealous.
But the youth isn't even willing to engage. Like, if Rachel got an email from Cracker Barrel saying, what do you Cracker Barrel do?
Listen.
She wouldn't answer.
I'm not saying you'd randomly hit people up.
She's too disrespectful to Cracker Barrel.
But you can do these things called focus groups where you pay people for their opinions. And then you go get get 50 or 100, 150, 200 people in the age range you want. In different parts of the country, you pay them
$50. Was the CEO
this
of every company
all the time.
And the president.
What do you think people do when they test movies for the, like, you got to test, you get the, what do you call them, the screeners?
Yeah.
Yeah,
you
every
get,
movie's
you, you
successful.
Test audiences, and they say, oop, that ending sucks, fix that. And then you do. Like, you want to appeal to people, ask them what they want, and then deliver it.
I'm looking at the Cracker Barrel website right now, and I'm trying to find, I mean.
They have a website?
They do, and you can look at their entire menu. I'm looking at new for summer. Let me try to find something.
Yeah, what do we got? Do they have that bomb pop cocktail still?
I don't see any of the cocktails. I don't know if they're advertising that much online, but.
Okay.
These chicken tenders look good. I would eat them. They're drizzled with a sweet heat honey glaze.
Ooh. The chicken tenders are not all that good. You want the Sunday homestyle chicken. That's what you want at Cracker Barrel. You want the Sunday homestyle chicken, or the maple glaze is pretty good as well.
How are you not a millionaire? You should be a consultant. For
he
real.
He should be a YouTuber. And
I love that he said that Wheels should be the CEO of every company and the president.
We live in a utopia. The man simply got all the answers.
I just think, like, people will do this. Like, we just don't know how to get them what they want. Ask them.
What should we do about China, sir?
But the thing
is, what should we do about China, sir? Just don't go to war.
Oh. When you ask me what I want from Cracker Barrel, I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, I mean, you don't be specific about Cracker Barrel. What do you want in a restaurant? What will attract you? What will get you here? What menu items would you like? What kind of place do you want to go to? What kind of drinks do you want?
Why don't you go to the Cracker Barrel?
Why wouldn't you go
there?
That
is an interesting question. What draws you guys to a restaurant? What makes it, like, when you see a restaurant, like, you see an ad for it or whatever, what makes you go, like, ooh, I kind of want to try that?
The food. I mean, more than anything else is, like, does the food look good? And I think that's my problem with the Barrel is I went, didn't love the food.
Right.
How old were you last time you went?
Probably 22.
Yeah, and that's the problem, though. Or not the
Andrew
problem.
Andrew just shook his head at me so like, disappointed.
I'm just saying, like you know, I just how you think your tastes and yourself and the Cracker Barrel itself could not have changed.
Oh, you're saying I'm 10 years older? Maybe I should slide into the Cracker Barrel.
Rachel, you're old now. Material. You might like it.
You've changed. Yeah.
You might want some hard candy.
You're more of the demographic for the Cracker Barrel.
You've evolved in the way that all people must evolve as they grow.
Rachel's going to be sitting in those big oversized rocking chairs.
Yeah.
Getting her some potato casserole.
And that's lovely. You sit in the big rocking chairs, you play the giant checkers while you wait for your food. And then after you order, you play the peg thing.
You know what I do like about the Barrel is the gift shop.
Yeah.
That's fun. It's
old
just nice.
Candy.
They should have gift shops in more restaurants. Mm-hmm. It gives you something to do while you're waiting for your table.
You sound like Cracker Barrel material.
I mean, maybe we're turning a corner. Maybe he's convincing
more
me.
More restaurants should have gift shops.
I tell you what, I am not kidding about this. I bet half of my mother's wardrobe came from Cracker Barrel.
Yeah.
Everything she wore was from Cracker Barrel. She got this
spooky Halloween kind of sweatshirt.
She got this like cape shawl thing that she would wear everywhere from the months of like September through April. And that was a Cracker Barrel original.
Nice.
I highly recommend Cracker Barrel to anybody out there.
That's clear.
Where should we go for dinner tonight, for date night? Try the Barrel.
What are the chances you're going tonight? Have you talked yourself into it?
They're actually pretty high. I've definitely talked myself into it. Megan loves Cracker Barrel, and I'm not just saying that. She would say that, too. She loves Cracker Barrel.
Oddly defensive there.
It sounds like I'm projecting.
Yeah, you answered a question no one asked. But
doesn't cry whenever we go, okay?
Since you've opened the door, I'm going to ask you a personal marital question.
Yes.
So it seems like you, I'm not saying you wear the pants or you run things. You seem like, in some ways, like the child, but you set the stage.
The idea guy.
And she says yes or no. Is that accurate, or is she much more involved than you let on?
I'm the ideas man, generally, because I'm the one who gets insane cravings.
You're
that
the one
I
with
must,
passion.
Yes, I'm the one who gets the insane craving that must be sated, or I won't be able to stop thinking about it or talking about it. She's a much more normal person, so like she has a healthy standard relationship with food. So like if she is like, we haven't been to Cracker Barrel in a bit. Maybe we'll go in like 3 weeks or something. I don't know. We'll figure it out. If we find ourselves near Cracker Barrel, maybe we'll go. And where I, on the other hand, I'm like, I've been thinking about Cracker Barrel all day, and if I don't have Cracker Barrel, I don't know what's going to happen to me. So that's I more lay that out, and then she either takes it and goes like, yeah, we can go to Cracker Barrel. I love Cracker Barrel. Or she goes like, no. No, I just worked for 8 hours. I'm exhausted. So did you. You're exhausted.
Yeah, Vinny pouts, and then she responds, okay, period.
And then I usually do.
Jump up and down.
I usually do pout a little bit. It's more like, I just don't understand. You like Cracker Barrel. I don't
understand. He pouts out loud.
Yeah, I pout out loud.
Megan, can I get an oversized chunky bar? Megan.
Can we please go to the 7-Eleven? They have the special Mountain Dew flavor.
Come on. Just say yes. Oh. 249 DGS. We have Senator Bill Igoe coming on at the top of the hour. So, Rach, you need a ruling on your problem you're having with the media?
Yeah, this has been a problem I've experienced for several years now, and I wanted to bring it up to you guys and ask, am I just too sensitive? Do I need to get over myself, or should we have maybe some stricter rules, but just some better practices surrounding the things we put on the news without like a trigger warning or something. So obviously last week on Saturday, former President Trump was almost assassinated and the whole thing was caught on video. And watching coverage of the event, people would be, you know, you'd have a talking head giving opinion and then they'd be like, and here it is. And they would just show it and they would show it and they would show it and they would show it. And to me, it's a little traumatizing and uncomfortable to see the former president almost lose his life repeatedly, and they just show the video over and over and over again. Now, is everyone else just okay with this and I'm too sensitive, or do you think there's a better way of presenting this kind of material to the public?
Well, and as you're speaking, I'm thinking there was a level, had he had his ear shot off, they're probably not showing it.
Right.
So there's a level of physical damage that they're comfortable with and a level that they're not.
Well, you know, you say that, but when George Floyd was murdered, they showed that video over and over again.
True.
And I just remember thinking at the time, like, am I crazy that this bothers me so much? I don't want to see a man losing his like having the breath choked out of him in front of me repeatedly. And they're just showing it. And I get that you want, you know, people need to be able to see it. I get that. I'm not saying don't share information, but to just play it on a loop. Yeah. Feels.
And you know what they've done? And we all know this. You're watching the news and you're paying half attention, and then you hear the anchor go, now part of what you're going to see may be disturbing, and then you pay attention.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're pretty simple animals.
What do you think, Wheels?
I think their standard is basically, and I'm not trying to be crude about it, but their standard is all about how gross something is. If it's not gross, they're going to show it over and over and over again.
Like gross,
like
out
tons of blood, or, you know, graphic shooting things. Like, they don't show inside of a school shooting,
right?
You know, but we'll show those high school kids at Columbine jumping out windows all day every day, because it's not scary, it's impactful, it's emotional, but it's not gross. It's not, people aren't going to be like, oh, I can't believe you did that.
I think that's so sad that that's
what
our
it
standard
is.
Yeah. You know,
I think you're right though.
I think it is
how much blood is involved.
Yeah. And you know, when it comes to movies and stuff like that, obviously, you know, it's all fake. So nobody really, you know, people don't blink too much when that stuff exists in there. But when it's real life, we care a lot more about the impression something makes versus the emotion that comes with it. I don't know if I'm saying that the correct way, but like, because there are a lot of people that are impacted by all of these types of things differently. And the concern is never about a normal person being impacted by what is not a, quote, gross video. It's not graphic. It's not bloody. They'll never hesitate to show something that's disturbing but not bloody. But the bloodier it is, the less they're likely to keep showing it, or they'll blur it out or whatever.
Yeah, they'll show, like a school shooter, like in Uvalde, they'll show him wrecking his car. They'll show him taking shots at a teacher. They'll show him going in the door, but they just won't show anything else.
Right.
And to a lot of people, all those things I just mentioned are incredibly disturbing.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, when we think of, I bring this analogy up, but I think it is kind of, you know, for a long time, one of the lines wasn't crossed was they didn't show caskets coming back from overseas wars, but they did during Vietnam, and it started changing people's opinions because that image disturbed people greatly, seeing that many dead soldiers, right? They didn't even see them. They didn't. But then you also saw some of the battlefield footage, and all of that combined to change people's minds. If you had never seen those things and it's just an idea, it's not as disturbing.
In World War II, you didn't get any of that. And you'd go to the movies to see Mickey Mouse, and you'd get like,
American soldiers advancing on the Germans. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then that really was the 60s and the 70s was the boomers, ironically. The youngins back then were all about reality, and we're going to show you reality. This is what's going on with race relations. This is what it looks like when black people get beat with sticks and dogs sicked on them. This is what it looks like when soldiers are shot. That's when everything changed.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't think there's a problem with showing these types of images. I think it's important for us to see what's going on. Obviously, it's more like, oh, we're just doing 24-hour coverage and we need something to fill up the time. So go ahead and roll the tape. That's, I mean, with the attempted Trump assassination, a man lost his life.
Yep.
Every time we're watching that video, we're witnessing the moment when someone died.
Yeah.
It's just something I think we should be a little bit more thoughtful about in the media. But
and then eerily, like on TikTok, you'll see, here's the guy. Here, I've drawn a red circle around where he is in the crowd.
Right,
you get a lot of that kind of stuff, too.
Yep. And it's, you know, there it's a little bit different because, you know, at least on using that app in particular, because they'll say if something's graphic, there will be a blurred out thing and say, you have to click on this to say this is okay for you to watch, but you're not getting that on a live broadcast because it's a live broadcast. It's not something that's recorded and in a place where you can press play or don't.
In the future, we'll get to the point where they do show the gross stuff?
No, not in that sense. I think there'd be so much blowback if they did that they'd realize that's a bad idea. I don't know that people are ever going to be okay with that on a regular basis.